This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We hit the field light all day light, all night light. Here we go,
Keep it all.
We don't want to run.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. I'm James Rapine. He is Daryl Ryder. We are your beat writers at 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com, breaking down the Browns, Indians, Cavaliers for you each and every week right here. It's a new podcast, second week, second episode. Daryl and I are excited. I can confirm. I'm going to speak for you, Daryl. You're excited to do this.
Is this episode 2, Revenge of Daryl or something?
That's right, Revenge of Daryl. You cried over the weekend. We're going to get to that.
I didn't cry.
Yeah.
I swore a lot. Yes.
You swore while you cried and your tears froze because there was a snowstorm in Cleveland. We'll get to that, too. He's on Twitter, at Right or Wrong Fan. I'm on Twitter, at James Rapine, so give us a follow there. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and... Yeah, we're doing this each and every week at 92.3thefan.com, and it'll be posted on other platforms as well here in the near future, so we're excited about that. But let's dive in. It's conference championship weekend, and that's where we ended last week's podcast. We gave some predictions for the conference championship games, and let's start with your New Orleans Saints.
I am now, I think, 1-4 on the year.
Your New Orleans Saints. They had them.
They did.
13-0. The game changes on the fake punt. We'll dive into all that. But the call that everyone's talking about, or the non-call that everyone's talking about, is a blatant, obvious, clear pass interference, helmet-to-helmet, unnecessary roughness, and none of them were called.
They had three options on the flag, and the official chose none of them.
Yeah.
You had three options, and you chose none.
And that, to me... It left a sour taste in my mouth. It left a sour taste in, I think, everybody who was watching that game. And it was a wonderful game. It went
to
overtime.
If you're a Rams fan, you're like, hell yeah, all right.
Well, yeah, but even then, of course, you like the end result as a Rams fan. But it still leaves
I mean, you had the Rams players bragging in the locker
room.
Like
12,
yeah,
first off, there's like 12 Los Angeles Rams fans. 12.
Are there even 12?
I mean, 12.
Not friends and family don't count.
Correct. So if you take them out, 12.
I have to say, one of my good friends works for the Rams, so I can't hate on him too much. I'm happy for my boy, Miles, former intern here at 92.3
Look
The
at
Fan.
You. Name dropping, shouting out.
He worked with me during Browns training camp a couple of years ago. Ended up getting hired by the Rams when they were in St. Louis. Did such an outstanding job with them that they moved him to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And he's still there. So he gets to go to the Super Bowl. So that's a hell of a career leap from him to go from helping Daryl Ryder cover Cleveland Browns training camp to now he's covering Super Bowl 53.
And Mercedes-Benz Stadium's amazing.
Yeah, it is. But, yeah, I mean, tough loss for the Saints. And it's unfortunate that such an egregious error tainted what was a great championship Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the AFC Championship was just as good. I really don't want to hear people bitching about overtime rules. I think the overtime rules are perfectly fine. I think where the NFL needs to invest its energy this offseason is in the officiating. Whether it's making more guys full-time, whether it's training these guys better, I don't know what, but you can't miss a receiver being tackled with the conference championship on the line and not call and have the option to call three penalties and you call none of them.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else on the field is willing to come over and help out. Or the side judge's ego is so big. He's like, no, I saw everything. It's all good. And it wasn't. So I think the NFL really needs to look at their officiating this offseason. We saw it here in Cleveland and this is a case in point for Browns fans. During the season, James, I kept telling people, you know, whether it was the offsides, or I should say the false start, the Chargers committed that ended up in a touchdown. I mean, the Browns got their butt kicked that game anyway, so that call really didn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But it was an egregious officiating mistake.
Oakland is what stands out to me.
You know, how you could respot a ball without a camera angle of the actual line to gain after a replay review is still beyond me. In that Oakland game, too, you had the strip sack. Miles Garrett had a strip sack that should have gone for a scoop six. In that game that got wiped out because the quarterback was ruled in the grass or some nonsense. And I kept telling Browns fans, listen, it's not just you. The NFL doesn't just hate you. It hates the other 31, well, the other 30 teams because, you know, Tom Brady and the holier-than-thou New England Patriots getting the... Did you see the roughing the quarterback penalty he got?
All right, so it's a missed call, and people keep bringing that up.
A missed call?
Only Tom Brady gets that.
He got a left tap on the shoulder pad and got 15 yards.
And you know what the official thought it was?
He thought he got hit in the head, which is ridiculous.
He got hit in the face mask. Yeah, I know. It was a bad call.
And here's the thing. Don't think. Your eyes aren't deceiving you. Call what your eyes see. Don't call what you think.
So here's the argument. And a lot of people, a lot of fans are saying, all right,
that
should be reviewable.
New Orleans didn't think anything because he didn't call anything.
They all should have been reviewable, right? That's what fans are thinking. And to me, if you do that, and this is my concern, because it's like review everything because you could get that call ready.
You're going to have college football where the game's going to take 5 hours.
Forever.
And
the last thing I want is stop after stop. After stop, just to review what?
I think that there's two mechanisms the league can do here. Mm-hmm. One is you can institute an automatic, similar to the final 2 minutes of each half, because that's usually when things are in the balance, the final 2 minutes of the half. Because, I mean, if it's the second quarter with 8 minutes left and it's a questionable pass interference, that is not going to decide the game.
And we're
going to
forget about it anyway.
Right.
There was a questionable call on the Rams earlier in the game that we forgot about. Anyway,
right.
Go ahead.
Well, the Saints had Goff by the face mask that did not get called. So there is a human error element to this thing. But unfortunately, this is one that just is unacceptable. You can't have it. It's not like it was a questionable pass interference. There were three fouls on the play that could have been called. You could have had pass interference. You could have had defenseless receiver. And you had helmet-to-helmet contact. So when you have three fouls and none get called, that's an issue. But I think that what the league can do, James, is they have a couple options at their disposal. I don't think reviewing everything or expanding instant replay is the way to go.
That's my nightmare.
I don't think that's the way to go.
It's a nightmare.
It's going to totally mess with the flow of the game. I think what you do, the final 2 minutes, yes, give the replay center in New York the option to buzz the game location. Hey, we're looking at this real quick just to make sure that it was or was not a foul. Or, hey, you guys need to huddle up on this thing. You got a mistake here. You need to correct.
Mm-hmm.
So that's option one. The problem with that option is it's very ambiguous. There's a lot of gray area. And you could potentially create even more problems than you actually saw.
And that would be my concern, is let's say it's an obvious holding call that doesn't get called.
Right. I mean, what's the limit?
Correct. Where's the line? Where's it drawn? And how's it going to affect things? Because all of a sudden, if it's a random, we're getting buzz from New York, and there's a holding on 77, and now first and 10 becomes second and 25, it's a nightmare, depending on where the spot is and all that stuff. It's just... That's scary.
My second option is to give, similar to the challenge system, have a penalty challenge.
One?
Each coach gets one penalty challenge per game. And here's how it works. If you win your first penalty challenge, you get a second one. If you don't win the penalty challenge, you lose your timeout, and you no longer get to challenge penalties.
Yeah. Is that only pass interference? You can't challenge holding.
Well,
that to me would be a nightmare.
Right. And again, there is
face mask and pass interference only.
There are no perfect solutions to fix what happened in New Orleans other than just get better officials.
Mm-hmm.
Just get better officials.
And that's where I'm at. Look, if a player messed up, goofed up, threw an interception, had an awful game, well, guess what? They're getting cut.
Right.
You know, I think back to some of the biggest gaffes in NFC title game history. The one that comes to mind the most is a couple years ago, the Packers. The fumbled onside kick.
Yeah.
That guy, I forget his name, but he was cut the next day or 2 days later. And he's still in the NFL or bouncing around. But that, to me, that's where you're at. If you're an official and you're in that game, you can't screw up in that moment that bad.
Yeah. Now, and so back to my earlier point to Browns fans, it's not just that the NFL hates you and you're getting all these crappy calls. Crappy calls have been throughout the league for the entire year. And part of the issue is they had some retirements. Okay, some of the experienced guys got out.
Biceps, and, Ed Hockley. Yeah, now his son's in there.
Yeah, and his son was part of the egregious, quarterback was a runner, therefore he's allowed to be hit in the head, Baker Mayfield at Tampa Bay. So I think that that's where we're at. Just get better officials, plain and simple. I don't think that there's a perfect solution to what happened in New Orleans. It sucks that they basically ripped a second Super Bowl opportunity away from one of the all-time greatest players in the game. And also, it's a very harsh, bitter reminder of just how hard it is not only to get to a Super Bowl or to the championship round in any sport, World Series in baseball, NBA Finals in basketball, the Stanley Cup Finals in hockey. It's really, really hard to win it. And we've seen it here, you know. Everyone's optimistic because the Browns went 7-8-1. Well, I am too, but next year's not guaranteed for as good as everything seems to be coming together. I mean, God, the Indians in 2016 losing games. I'm like, okay, no big. Like the coping mechanism for that was it's no big deal because they're going to get back next year and they're going to get back the year after that and they're going to have plenty of chances to win a World Series. Guess what? The Indians haven't sniffed the World Series since losing that Game 7, and quite frankly, and I'm not hating on them, I just think it's reality, I don't think they're going to. I mean, it took them nearly 10 years to recover after from Game 7 of the 97 World Series in Miami just to get back to the ALCS, which, oh, by the way, they were up 3-1 and blew the final three games against the Boston Red Sox in 2007. And then it took almost another 10 years, just to, nine more years.
It's a process, especially in baseball.
It's just a harsh, bitter reminder of how difficult it is in any sport to climb the mountaintop, covering the Cavaliers the last couple of years in the playoffs and just seeing what a grind the NBA playoffs are, not only to win a conference championship, but to try and win the whole thing. So there's I just have a little different perspective and greater respect and appreciation for what it takes to get to that level, and that's why I'm even more pissed, because they were right there. Like, they had the game won. Now, the argument is that you could have still banked the field goal or shanked the field goal after killing the clock and whatnot, or you got to play defense a couple of times and your defense didn't get it done. You did get the ball back on another possession in overtime, and you did nothing with it. I get all those arguments, but there is something to be said for momentum and what a call like that does. You think you have the conference championship won, all of a sudden that's ripped away from you over a no call. There's an emotional element that the adrenaline and everything that you had going, it sucks the life out of you a little bit. So, yes, the Saints still had chances to win the football game after that call, but I think the NFL, the solution to the problem, the NFL just needs to get better officials.
Sure.
Because what I watched this year, and again, this isn't just because I'm in the vacuum of covering the Cleveland Browns, and it was every week, whether it was with Ken and Anthony in the morning, or the midday guys, or Bull and Fox, or even at night with Chico, it was every freaking week they're asking me about officiating. And it became a weekly thing. So I think that the solution is an expanded replay. What's done is done. There's nothing you can do to fix what happened in New Orleans. I think how you fix it is you just get better people at the job, period.
That's fair. No, and that's fair. And this is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. We do this every single week at 92.3thefan.com. I get it. And you did mention the Saints having chances, having opportunities. That's where I'm at. Sean Payton, what the hell are you doing? You get the ball. Ted Ginn makes that catch, which I've never seen Ted Ginn make a catch like that, a contested catch.
Rams had two timeouts, so it didn't matter if he ran it. The clock was still going to be what the clock was.
I'm not saying run the clock out. Third and 10, Who are you throwing to? Who was that? Because Michael Thomas is the guy that I would throw it to. It would be finding a way to get the ball to 13, and they didn't. And that's the guy you target. That would be the guy.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think the Rams had that sniffed out.
That's fine, but why do I always watch New England somehow get the ball to Edelman or somehow get the ball to Gronk? You know, I mean, that's what they do, and that's the difference to me. And you mentioned, and I'm going to tie it all together, you mentioned how hard it is to get to a championship. That's what makes Brady, Belichick, Belichick, Brady so amazing is the fact. And they, honestly, I think they're going to, my gut feeling is they're going to lose to the Rams. I think the Rams are more talented.
I actually hope they do.
I'm there. But to me, the fact that they still, and I don't think they were the most talented team in the playoffs. They were probably the fourth most talented roster of the four playing on Championship Sunday.
So you bought the Brady and Belichick nobody thinks we're any good anymore BS?
To a degree. I think that they knew this was the worst. This is the worst roster that they've made the Super Bowl with in this three-year stretch that they've went back-to-back-to-back years. And I expected Mahomes to find a way, and we both picked Kansas City last week, and they didn't. So tie it all together. Hey, Sean Payton, how about you find a way to get one more first down? You have Drew Brees. How about in overtime when you get the ball first? Everyone's whining and bitching and moaning about how New England got the ball first and they marched right downfield, made it look easy. That's really freaking hard to do.
All you have to do is play defense.
Drew Brees and the Saints had that, and guess what happened? They got pressure on Brees, hit his elbow, ball goes up in the air, targeting Michael Thomas, by the way, and the Rams pick it off. So let's tie it all together. I don't think there's a huge overtime issue.
You are allowed to play defense in overtime.
Correct.
Like, I think that when they adjusted the overtime rules a couple years ago and they took the sudden death aspect out of it, you know, so if you kick a field goal, the other team still gets an opportunity to possess the ball. I think that that was the overtime remedy. But if you kick off in overtime and you give up an 80-yard drive for a touchdown, well, that's your bad.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that how they changed the overtime rules a couple, I thought that was the perfect remedy for it. There's nothing else to change. Mm-hmm. Play defense in overtime.
Yep.
Plain and simple. Like, you're on the field too, you know? Kansas City fired their defensive coordinator, which, I mean, what, they were ranked 30th
or 31st?
I believe
it's Bob Sutton.
They were like 30th or 31st in the league,
mm-hmm.
but this past season. But, you know, you can play defense. So, I think the NFL needs to focus their attention on rectifying this officiating issue more so than the overtime rules. I think the overtime rules are perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Perfectly fine. There's nothing. Listen, you got beat by the greatest of all time. If you're Kansas City right now and you're Pat Mahomes, And I know I just like said you can't play this card when I used the Indian example with it, but what, Pat Mahomes is what, 22, 23 years
correct.
Old?
It's his first year starting.
Right. So odds are that this is not going to be the last time he's in the postseason, and you got beaten by the greatest of all time, Tom Brady. Tom Brady beat you. Like that's all there is to it. And your defense sucked.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that the overtime issue is an issue. It's great for you, me, and everyone that does this for a living to talk about. It's great fodder for fans. I don't see the issue with the overtime rules. I see an issue with the officiating,
mm-hmm.
and they need better people calling these games. But I think that they brilliantly restructured the overtime rules. And listen, you give up a drive. Hey, if Drew Brees would have marched the Saints right down the field after getting that overtime kickoff and put a touchdown on the board, guess what?
He'd be in the Super Bowl.
I'm not dropping all the seven dirty words or whatever.
Sean Payton's overrated.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go ahead and say it. Sean Payton's overrated. He's in the NFC Championship game with Drew Brees playing at such a high level.
I thought you were going to say Sean McVay's a genius.
Last year.
By the way, if you're Sean McVay's water boy, you're in line for a head coaching job next year.
It might replace Sean Payton. Last year, your defensive secondary is unprepared with 10 seconds to go. Do you think a Bill Belichick coach defense has that screw up in the Minnesota Miracle? Probably not. This year, your team has the ball under, what, it was a minute to go. You have the ball in Rams territory. It was a minute 40.
Not that I was paying attention or anything.
I knew it was under 2 minutes to go. I knew that. So You have that. You get the 3-point lead. Then you go to overtime. You have the ball. You have so many opportunities.
You know what? You know what it reminds
me of?
Sean
Payton's overrated.
It reminds me. I don't think Sean Payton's overrated. I think that it reminds me of LeBron with the Cavs. LeBron played 11 seasons here. The Cavaliers have just one championship to show for it. Sean Payton and Drew Brees, all the time that they've spent together in New Orleans.
Don't do this.
They only have one champ. It's disappointing.
How many of those 11 years did LeBron have the roster that the Saints do? The Saints might have the most talent in the league, or they're right there.
There's a reason I picked them to win the Super Bowl this year.
Kamara, Michael Thomas.
It has nothing to do with the fact that I was born in New Orleans either. I thought that they were the most complete team in the National Football League this year, and they blew it. Listen.
I thought they were the most talented team last year, for sure.
They blew it. I admit it.
But he's not overrated.
I don't think Sean Payton's overrated.
And LeBron never had a Sean Payton equivalent either.
No, he had Mike Brown.
Just saying. Ty Lue.
Ty won a championship with Ty Lue.
Can't
bag on
But I'm
Ty.
Saying Ty Lue was known before he came here to Cleveland.
He had David
for getting
Blatt.
Stepped over.
He had David Blatt. Mike Brown.
See?
Paul Silas.
Don't make excuses. Paul Silas. That's right. Yes, Paul Silas.
Am I speaking Chinese? Paul freaking Silas.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Forgot about good old Paul.
Oh, gosh. The Paul Silas stories I could tell. Someday we'll get into it on this podcast.
Paul Silas might be underrated. But Sean Payton's overrated.
When we get into like the slow times of the year, we're going to do some story time with Uncle Daryl.
That's great. We'll get a sounder.
I got some
story time with Uncle Daryl.
I would probably say, am I speaking Chinese, is probably one of my all-time top five favorite quotes ever.
And I would have agreed with you with I'm just ignoring what you just said. I would have agreed with you about the LeBron comparison if it wasn't for the past 2 or 3 years where the Saints have drafted well, they've won double-digit games, they've won their division, they've been one of the better teams in the league. Before that, when they were going 7-9 a couple years ago towards
the
end,
to look back on this stretch, I think, similar to the Cavaliers, in the sense that you had one of the greatest of all time. I'm not willing to, I think GOAT gets used way too much in our business. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Drew Brees is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Just
top 10.
His resume speaks for itself.
Sure.
But the fact that the Saints have only been able to win one championship, mm-hmm. and again, it goes back to my how freaking hard it is to win a championship. Mm-hmm. They have one of the greatest players of a generation in Drew Brees. They got one championship, and that was won 9 years ago.
And
I remember when the Saints won Super Bowl 44. Mm-hmm. How excited I was and thinking, man, gonna do this a lot now, right? Yeah. And then just one thing after another, you know, whether it's the Minnesota Miracle or the...
And I give Brees credit in the Minnesota Miracle game. He balled out.
He did.
In that fourth quarter.
He lost on a freak play.
Going against that Minnesota defense, which was awesome, and just destroyed it in the fourth quarter, shredded them, gives them the lead. Game should be over. That was his moment. That was the... Game's on the line. I'm Drew Brees. I'm going to go down there and win it and get my team to the Super Bowl. And then Sean Payton's team looked unprepared.
The defense got caught with
the
pants
down. And
I know
it was a rookie. I get it.
Got caught with
Patriots
the pants down,
rookies make interceptions in the Super Bowl.
I know. But
Malcolm Butler.
Going to look back on this stretch and just be very regretful. You only got one. Because I think this was it for them.
I think it might be two.
I don't know how you recover from this. So, again, I go back to Game 7 with the Indians. How do you recover from losing a Game 7 of a World Series in extra innings?
Mm-hmm.
The Indians are the only team in history to now have to do it twice.
After being up 3-1.
Yeah. The second time they're up 3-1, but you're up in the bottom of the ninth inning. You're up a run. You know, you're up 2-1 in the bottom of the ninth, three outs away.
They're
hanging the tarps at the old Joe Robbie Stadium, whatever they call that place down in Miami these days. But
I was talking about the more recent time, but yes.
Yeah. How do you recover from something? And I honestly don't think that they do. I really don't. I think that this very well could be the end for them because the Rams aren't going anywhere. That team is built for a little bit of a run here. They've done, you give that organization, Stan Kroenke and company, you give them a lot of credit for what they've built.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, just recognizing how hard it is to get to that level. So yeah, you can never take for granted the we'll be back there next year.
Yeah. Speaking of we'll be back in just a second. He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Erpine. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast. And up next, I'm going to run a theory by Daryl on why it was a good thing that the Rams won. We'll get to that next on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
All right, let's dive into this. So I think it's a good thing for the NFL in general that the Rams won. Are you ready for this?
Because there'll be a 13th person that gives two craps that there's a team in L.A.
No. I don't care about that. And by the way, they don't really care about that in L.A. I have friends in L.A. Right?
I know they don't.
Yeah, they're just, you know, just the okay. Like casual L.A. residents.
They care that the Dodgers make the World Series. They care
about the Lakers.
About the Lakers being good. They don't give two bleeps about the Clippers. They don't care about either hockey team.
The Chargers.
The Chargers play in a 20,000-seat soccer stadium that's filled with 19,000 fans from the opposing team.
Yeah.
So basically, the Chargers play 16 road games a year. I think that they're the team that they have to get out. Like, if you want to keep – obviously, the Rams aren't going over. They're building this beautiful stadium out there. It's going to be the Disneyland of football, as they're calling it. With, you know, the NFL Network and NFL Media is going to move on to the campus where that stadium is and everything. That's all well and good. But the Chargers don't have a long-term future in Los Angeles.
No, they should have stayed in San Diego.
They don't.
Well, I think it would have been great.
They couldn't stay in San Diego because that stadium was such a dump. It was the second-worst stadium behind Oakland.
Owners should be able to
build their own stadiums.
Build their own stadium.
I don't disagree. The 49ers built their own stadium. The Golden State Warriors built their own arena. The San Francisco Giants built their own ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
The Los Angeles Dodgers renovated Dodger Stadium. The Los Angeles Lakers and Clippers built the arena. I think the Clippers were in on that. Like, public dollars in California for stadiums just do not exist. And yet, the state has been able to, basically, with the exception of the Chargers and the Raiders and the Oakland Athletics, build all these facilities, and it's because they all have owners that have the means to do it. I am, you know, the financial landscape of professional sports has now changed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you have billions upon billions of dollars in revenue coming courtesy of television contracts, which 20, 30 years ago in the stadium building boom in the 90s when it began, that weren't there. And so you needed the public subsidy to help.
Yep.
You don't need that anymore.
Agreed.
You know, I am of the firm belief if the Cleveland Browns ever want a new stadium, which I think in 10 years they potentially could want a new stadium.
I absolutely think that will happen.
They can build it themselves.
They should.
You've got billionaire owners that have the money to do it. It's your team, your investment. Do it. You know, the Indians, I think, is a little different story because of it's different dollars with Major League Baseball versus the NFL. Dan Gilbert has sunk well over $100 million of his own money into the arena since he bought the Cavaliers. I mean, I remember when he first bought the team, the first thing he did was change out the seats, and he paid for it because he didn't want to see the ugly blue seats on television.
Yeah.
So he tore out the seats, put in all new seats. He put a new scoreboard in, and he just didn't even want to bother with the whole political discourse and red tape and everything else. But yeah, I'm of the belief now when you're talking about stadiums, it's part of the reason Mark Davis went to Las Vegas, or will go to Las Vegas. he does not have the financial depth that all these other owners have. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't have to buy his way into the league with billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have the money to build his own stadium. Same thing with the Oakland A's. That's why they're having the problems that
they're
having.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing with the Chargers. That family that owns them, they don't have the financial backing to finance that stadium. But mm-hmm. I think that where the NFL needs to step in is you need to make that happen no matter what.
Sure.
You know,
I'm with you.
Whether it's you're taking they already have a stadium program in place. So I remember when the Browns renovated First Energy Stadium, $30 million came from the city of Cleveland over 15 years, and the rest of it was paid for by the Browns. And granted, that was because First Energy gave them $100 million for the naming rights, so they basically flipped that revenue into a stadium renovation. But to pay for it up front, they also got a loan from the NFL to help pay the initial cost mm-hmm. of actually doing the construction. And so the league does have programs like that, but I think it's a shame that the Chargers are no longer in San Diego. San Diego Superchargers, I'm not a big NFL fight song guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I go to Detroit to cover Browns and Lions, the dude that I respect the guy.
You know what? I love, and I'm going to let you continue, but I love that you're doing this to prolong my why the Rams won is a good
that's
thing.
That's exactly why I'm
keep
doing
going.
This
no,
too.
It's all right. Keep going. I'm going to get to
but,
it.
But I don't like NFL fight songs. The guy in Detroit, God bless him, the Lions song's annoying. The Bengals song in Cincinnati's
something,
annoying.
Something prowling. Yeah, I don't even know it. Yeah. It's rough.
All horrible.
It's but rough.
The one fight song that is not horrible was the San Diego Superchargers fight song. I love that song. The powder blue uniforms, lightning bolt. White helmets, oh, fantastic. But, yeah, I think it sucks that the Chargers are no longer in San Diego. They're in L.A. Nobody gives a crap about them. They now have to share a home. By the way, I'm going to help out Stan Kroenke. He now needs to get Chrysler to be the sponsor of his stadium because he'll have a Ram and a Charger.
Oh, man.
Within the stadium.
Look at you.
Marketing
you.
Genius
you
right
are.
Here.
Marketing genius. And all I'm, and I'm
your,
about to rip your heart out.
I know. Give me your crap all right, theory Darryl why Ryder. It was so good, why
it,
the
it
Rams
was,
won.
It was great for the NFL that the Rams won because what do NFL teams do? NFL
relocate?
They copy each other. They copy each other. They copy each other. They copy each other. And what have the Rams done over the past couple of years? They've been so active in trades, free agency. They go get Ndamukong Suh and trade for Marcus Peters and trade for all these guys. And what did the Eagles do last year? The exact same thing. They went in and traded for Jay Ajayi, and they signed this corner, and they made this trade, and they
did
this.
What did John Dorsey do last year?
They're so active. That's the point, is if you're an NFL team, you're going to see these front offices that we've heard it for years. Oh, the Steelers, they don't operate that way. Free agency, nope, they don't do that. It's draft, build, draft, build. That's just what they do.
Yep.
And they pay their own. Well, now these teams, they're going to be like, oh, if we make wise decisions in free agency, if we go get really talented players, if we decide to take a risk on the disgruntled veteran via trade, it could be worth it. So I think we're going to see more and more and more player movement across the NFL. If you're a Browns fan, I think it's great because now I think free agents will look at Cleveland and it'll be more appealing than it's been really in my lifetime, since I was born in 91, maybe the mid-90s it was, 93, 94.
I thought you were going to tell me you were looking forward to, like, Sean Payton's secretary being the next head coach of, like, the...
No, it's it literally... this
team here.
I think it really, it's going to impact the NFL. You're seeing it with coaches. That's a good point. Everyone's like, oh, let's get this hot new young offensive mind.
The Bengals hired his quarterbacks coach.
I know.
Well, to be their head coach.
Who was an awful coordinator for the University of Cincinnati back in 2016. But he's an NFL head coach, so who knows if that works out. But to me, if that needs more player movement, the one thing I love about the NBA is the player mobility. And people here might hate that I'm saying that. But I love not knowing what's going to happen, not knowing what stars are going to land where. If the NFL gets more and more like that, I think people will enjoy it. And I think it benefits teams with franchise quarterbacks, i.e. Baker Mayfield and the Browns.
Well, I do agree with the off-season activity. I'm a believer in proven players over draft picks any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
I agree.
Because all draft picks are it's a fugazi. It doesn't
it's a lottery
exist.
Ticket. It's a scratch-off.
That's all it is. You have no idea if it's going to work out. You have no – so I have. That's why.
And you've covered it firsthand.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be mean, but it's true.
I mean, the Browns for years have been the kings of blowing first-round draft picks. I think that that is now changing, that John Dorsey is making the picks because you finally have somebody that, you know, knows how to evaluate talent. But I think that you can strike the happy balance between picking in the draft to supplement your roster and also at the same time being aggressive in the trades. You know, you look at some of the top performers for the Browns last season here, you know, Demaryius Randle.
Mm-hmm.
They traded freaking DeShone Kizer for him and a couple of draft picks, you know?
Yep.
Jarvis Landry, a 4 and a 7, a 4 last year, a 7 this year to Miami for him. He was the leading receiver, okay?
A no-brainer.
Right.
Yep.
So when you, you know, look at it that way, they traded Carlos Hyde so they could make way for Nick Chubb to take over. So yeah, from that standpoint, yeah, I enjoy when teams are aggressive on the trade market. And I'm not talking like during the draft when they're like swapping picks and all that. That's probably my least favorite part of the draft.
It's tough. Right. It's tough to cover that.
And the Browns have been always involved in stuff like that, but you know, when you're talking about when the new league year begins in mid-March and you start seeing that type of activity, I remember last year they, you know, the Browns had 3 trades the weekend before the new league year was even going to begin. Like they were in the queue. You know what I mean? Yep. Like they were waiting to be processed in the league office. You know,
and it was those two and Taylor,
and,
right?
And Tyrod Taylor with Buffalo because they, you know, were hoping that Tyrod would keep the seat warm this year and basically do what Baker Mayfield did, win 6-7 games or so, and then Baker could take over in year 2, similar to what happened with Pat Mahomes in Kansas City. Unfortunately, Tyrod Taylor's not Alex Smith, so there's a little difference.
No, I think it's fortunately.
In talent. So it worked out that, you know, I'm a believer in any time that there's conflict, conflict's the wrong word. Anytime there's debate over something, you know, like you got two guys competing for one job, I just don't get real emotional about it or too invested because it'll work itself out.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will get hurt. Someone will do something stupid. Someone will play themselves off the field. It works itself out.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Indians and spring training and stuff like that. When they, you know, they're competing for it, just, it works itself out. Just sit back, sip a cup of Joe, enjoy the show.
How about that? You're rhyming. But I think that the NFL activity, though, it's just going to be such. It's going to be boosted. Like the idea,
thought you were going to go with the second biggest market in the country.
Couldn't give a damn.
And you got to establish the franchise. And
couldn't care less. No, but I just think.
By the
from
way,
a fan
Saint,
perspective,
if you're St. Louis right now, I feel for those people.
Yep. I bet.
I feel for them.
Yep.
You know, where the hell was this 3 years ago? Although, I mean, they, you know, did get to the Super Bowl in St. Louis, but still, you know. Thinking about your team. Was it 2 years that they moved 2 years ago?
3.
This is year 3?
This is year three for them. So McVay's been there for 2 years, and your boy Jeff Fisher was there for 1.
So, yeah, so if the Rams end up, this is actually going to be worse because it took the Ravens 5, I believe, from when they left Cleveland.
It did because it was, 96 through 2000? Because they won in 2000.
Yeah, so, yeah, it took them 4 or 5 years to actually to win the Super Bowl. So this is even worse if the Rams win this. And I have no vested interest in the Super Bowl as far as like rooting goes. I'm just going to sit back, enjoy the game, and whoever wins, wins. I mean, frankly, I respect the dynasty that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have built.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired of it. Like,
I'll be honest with you.
It's like the Yankees winning the World Series as many times as they have.
I have a clear rooting interest.
I love seeing new teams that haven't been there. I love seeing those teams win.
I'm rooting for Tom Brady so much.
Yeah.
The other night.
Think about this. Since the turn of the century, the New England Patriots have played in every other Super Bowl. They have played in 50% of the Super Bowls.
We'll never see that again.
That's insane.
That's why I'm rooting for it. It's because we're never – I want history. I want greatness, and they've already gotten there. They're there now. Pat Mahomes will get another opportunity. Sean McVay's not going anywhere.
Well, we think Pat Mahomes is going to get another opportunity.
I promise you he will get another.
There are no guarantees now. No, we had this discussion earlier where you're not paying attention.
No, there aren't, but come on. Pat Mahomes, he's a freak.
It stands to reason that he's going to get back to that level.
You know what that it felt like to me? LeBron in 07, you know, the Cavs get there.
Oh, yeah. When they got by the Detroit Pistons again, it just you go back to that, man, this is going to be fun. Going to do this every year. And then they couldn't even get back to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando bumped them out.
The only way the Chiefs don't get there again is if the front office fails them.
Or Pat Mahomes gets hurt.
Yeah, correct. Assuming,
and I'm not, not trying to be net, but that's the reality.
Yeah. I mean, assuming health, though, long as you build around him, he's going to get to a Super Bowl.
What is it, 17 seasons Tom Brady has not been injured?
Yeah, he tore his ACL in 08, but outside of that.
Right. Think about that for a second, mm-hmm. okay? Best player on the best team in the league for nearly two decades, going strong, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been helped. Like, it's similar to LeBron. You know, you're able to take care of your body in a fashion that you're still getting hit like everybody else is.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you're still able to overcome and play through the little things and not only play through the little things, but still maintain the same high level of play while you're doing. It's incredible.
And you know what I think he did this year? Because a lot of people talked about how his play dropped off at times this year. That was a big topic. I think he pulled a LeBron. Regular season, we're going to win the division.
Oh, they play in the softest division in the
league. We're going to get a bye, but I'm not trying to go 14-2 and set records and take a bunch of regular season hits. If we go 11-5, 12-4, that's fine. I'll turn it on in the playoffs.
Yeah.
How many times did we see LeBron wait till January to, all right, it's time to slowly ramp it up? He did that year after year. We saw it during all those title runs.
But here's the thing, and here's why he did, because he learned his first time in Cleveland. He was expending all this energy in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Cavs won 63 games. I forget the number. They were in the 60s, his last year here.
Mm-hmm.
They spent all this energy, you know, winning the top seed and all those type of things. Then he gets to Miami and he realizes, man, who cares?
Yep.
As long as I'm on the floor, seven-game series, baby, bet on me every time. I don't care if I'm the first seed or the eighth seed. We're going to win the series. And I don't care where we have to play either. It does not matter to me. If we have to go play the first two games of a series on the road, so be it. He learned to conserve his energy and spend it accordingly.
Yep.
And we've seen this with him in Los Angeles a little bit too, where he'll take plays off on the defensive end.
No doubt. It was obvious last year,
you know,
too.
He's not exactly going to bust it down the floor each and every time. Okay. And that's okay. He picks and chooses his spots to burn his energy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's learned it. And to his credit, and that's what the great players do,
mm-hmm.
is they learn how to manage their bodies both mentally and physically so that when the game is on the line or the championship's on the line, whatever, okay,
mm-hmm.
that's when they're able to turn it on and be at their peak. And, you know, what Tom Brady has done into his 40s is nothing short of incredible. I agree with you. I don't think we'll ever see this again. I mean, you can make an argument. They should name a trophy after Bill Belichick or Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know all the trophy names are spoken for or whatever, but that's how great these guys are together.
And I like Brady, the athlete. I'm biased. I root for him. Like, I just, I'm a Tom Brady fan.
It's because of Giselle, isn't it?
It has, well before Giselle.
Okay.
He was the comeback kid at, people are going to hate this, but even at Michigan. I remember, and I'm not a Michigan fan at all, but
you can,
man,
follow James on Twitter at James Rapine.
Yeah, that's right. But the comeback kid, as he was known, I've always rooted for Tom Brady. I don't know why. I don't know what it was. And then he becomes this star and wins Super Bowls and all this stuff happens. But to me, getting six.
All I know is that Bill Belichick pulled a Bernie 2.0 with Drew Bledsoe and it worked.
Yes, that's right.
It worked.
It did.
It totally worked.
Yep.
And
I don't think anyone, even after three, after they got three Super Bowls, I don't think anyone expected this. Look at his career 2012 on.
Yeah.
Like that alone, look at that, the past 6 years. That's better than most quarterbacks.
I still can't get over, though, that basically this century, 50% of the Super Bowls have been Tom Brady and Bill Belichick
mm-hmm.
participating. It's incredible.
It is.
And you'll never see that again.
No.
I mean, I go back to the Saints. They got one. They got 44 in the can.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to.
Brett Favre, one. Right, Aaron Rodgers, one.
Right. And that's what makes what Brady, as annoyed as I am by it, and I'm just New England Patrioted out, okay? But I respect the hell out of what they have been able to do, the dominance, the consistency, the dynasty that they have built. It's incredible. We'll probably never see it again. And you have tremendous respect for it. But that just amplifies the greatness that they've achieved because, as you just mentioned, you Dan Marino, for as great as he was, never won one.
Never.
Okay? For as great as some of those Browns teams and Bernie was here in Cleveland, never won anything. Won a couple division titles, got to the AFC, didn't win anything. No disrespect to those guys, but that's like the cold, hard math.
As great as Joe was, got to four. I know he won all four.
How about this?
Got to four.
How about the Chiefs bringing out Joe Montana to be their, like, what it, you know, whoop up the crowd? He didn't win a Super Bowl with the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm. You're right. That's true.
He won all his Super Bowls with San Francisco, and they're bringing Joe Montana out to be like, what is wrong with this picture?
You think Joe was secretly rooting for Tom Brady?
No, I don't know.
Brady grew up a big Joe Montana fan, a 49ers fan.
Yeah, but no,
I don't know. It's just...
That's a great question.
You know, because is he rooting against him because he doesn't want, I don't want Brady to pass me twice, you know, get two more than I have.
I was going to say, Brady already passed him.
Well, 5-4. Yeah. But interesting.
But the Patriots are 5, right? They got 5 of them?
They're 5. So Brady's 5-3.
So they're ready to start the second hand. Steelers have 6. I would have no problem if the Patriots won and tied the Steelers.
Exactly. See, Browns fans, there's your that's why you can agree with James and root for Tom Brady and the Patriots. So the Steelers aren't left alone there with 6. I don't want that. Oh. Look, I'm from Cincinnati. We don't like the Steelers. You don't like the Steelers here either. So it's a natural transition. My God. I'd much rather New England get. I hope they get to 7, 8.
But then again, there's the part of me that, like last year, I loved that the Philadelphia Eagles beat the Patriots and ended their Super Bowl drought.
A half a second more, Brady completes the pass to James White on the far side of the screen. They pick up the first down and they march downfield and score the touchdown. And instead, it was a sack fumble. I remember the exact play. I remember James White is open at the top of the screen. Brady turns to throw it, and boom, he gets hit. Oh,
those are the breaks, kid.
You can tell I'm a big Brady fan.
You are a big guy. I did not know this about you.
Love him. I just do. I just love that. He's just great, and he holds himself to a high standard. And even though he has the supermodel wife and a moat and multiple houses and this perfect life, he still busts his ass.
How about this?
He busts his ass to play football.
He's also not the top paid quarterback in the league, and he should be.
Not even close.
It's not. Yeah, was he? I think he's making, 15 this
Something
year?
Something like that, yeah.
Because he's such a team guy that he's always restructured his contracts so that they could take care of his teammates, stay within the salary cap, supplement the team so that every year he can play for a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That, in and of itself, is greatness.
And they didn't supplement the team well enough this year.
No, they didn't.
I'll go ahead and say that. My God.
Not
Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan. I mean... Everyone's lost a step.
By the way, I gotta ask you, because since you mentioned there, I thought it's because you mentioned Edelman. How much of a fan are you of Tony Romo predicting and calling out the plays in a broadcast before they happen?
I loved it the other night. Now there are times last year where he got, I think, a little too much, a little too cute with it, where he did the telestrator. It was getting a little stale. I thought he was great the other night. You don't like it.
It's not that I don't like it. I would rather him explain to me after the play, after the completion to Edelman over
why,
the middle,
why
that happened, okay? And explain to me why explain it in reverse order, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. From the catch going all the way back to pre-snap and because to me, you're spoiling the movie. Now, you come off sounding like a genius and brilliant, and I think that's why everyone loves Tony Romo right now, and he's the hot analyst because it's different. You don't hear analysts do that on the air where they just say, hey, this is going to be a motion to the right. They're going to throw it over the middle, hit Edelman, boom. Mm-hmm. And then that's what happens. Like I just want to ask Tony, what are the lottery numbers and what's the Powerball?
Here's why I like it.
It's innovative. It's different. But also at the same time, I kind of feel like that the movie's being spoiled for me. I give him credit. He's done it. He sees it. But I feel like sometimes that it's ruining it for me. I would rather you explain to me, how in the hell is he trying to find Julian Edelman over the middle, and why is he always able to find him where he wants him, or Gronk?
And Edelman and Gronk weren't open, by the way.
That's what I'm
saying.
Some
of those throws were insane.
Like, that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're trying to get the ball to those guys. I want to know how in the hell, when you're trying, to your point earlier, when you're saying, you know, those are my targets,
crunch time,
and they
yep.
always find a way in crunch time with the game on the line to get the football in those guys' hands. I want to know why they're able to do it.
Sure.
Break it down for me and explain to me why every freaking time a situation with the game on the line, it's always Edelman or Gronk from Brady, you know, to either get the key first down or, you know, get the big chunk play or touchdown or whatever. Like, that to me is like the next level. Like, when Tony starts doing that a little less than the prediction, I think because I think he's a very good analyst. I enjoy listening to him and Jim Nance do a fabulous job. I just sometimes, you know, I just kind of get annoyed with the, okay, stop telling me what's going to happen. Can I watch the movie first? Then explain to me why it happened.
I see your point, and I get it. Here's why I like it, though. Because I'm...
James, it's 3rd and 9 here, James. Can you believe it? It's 3rd and 9. Here
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, and he gets me excited. I'm like, yeah, it is 3rd and 9. Edelman, catch this, you bleepity bleep. The reason I like it, though, in all seriousness, it's because as much as we know football, I'll speak for me.
Tony Romo's forgotten more football than I'll
ever know.
I don't
know X's and O's like that. Like, even if you played at high-level high school football, the stuff, 80% of the stuff on Sunday, you're not going to recognize some of that stuff and recognize the form. Oh, this is going to be a handoff to the right side because of the motion. And so it's like, oh, Edelman, that's the guy I need to be zoned in on. Don't worry about Dorsett at the bottom. That's who I should worry about on this play.
Yep.
And then it's there. So I get it. It's kind of like a spoiler.
Because you're able to key on, because he's saying, okay, the ball's going to go at Edelman, so your eyes automatically go to him, and
correct,
you're just going to follow him throughout the play. And
exactly.
See how it transpires.
So I like that. I do. I get why you say, oh, it's kind of like a spoiler alert. But, man, and maybe it's just
it's
because it was so
he's so well executed. He's
because
rarely wrong.
And that was the thing is, look, national television audience.
There was like 5 straight plays he called out in succession.
Yeah, Brady and the Patriots, well-oiled machine, and Tony Romo does the same thing. It just worked perfectly because they executed it as well as he predicted it.
Yeah.
And so what a great stage for Tony Romo to be on. Are you excited that he's on the Super Bowl call?
I am.
Okay, so even though that's there,
oh,
you're
yeah,
excited.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying that I don't like Tony Romo. I just, it's one minor critique of how he calls the game.
Last year, I think that got old for me, too. Like, it wore me down that he was, oh, watch the fade here. Watch the fade, Jim.
Right.
That got old. This year, I don't know if it's just because, I don't know, I feel like I've watched plenty of Tony this year, broadcasting and stuff, but I don't know if he hasn't done it as much. He backed off a little.
We're going to see a lot of Tony Romo next year.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Prime time, baby.
That's why this, I'm telling you, man, this is going to be a new animal for the Cleveland Browns in 2019.
And they're going to have all these free agents because the Rams set the standard.
Well, the good news is that you're not building the team through free agency, and I think that that's the misnomer. Everyone assumes that or wants to say that the Rams just, you know, went out and spent a ton, which they did. They did. They they spent a ton of money. Don't get me wrong. But that's not, like,
no, they had their best defensive player, Aaron Donald.
They drafted.
They had Jared Goff. They had Todd Gurley. They had their coach.
They drafted well. They hired well. And then they used their assets going forward to supplement their team. But that's how you do it. Like, that's the formula. I know you're saying that that's revolutionary or it's going to possibly change the way the league does business and gets away from the Packers and the Steelers and the Ravens with the draft and develop and compete. And
you'll still have to draft and develop.
Right.
Always.
I you know, we've seen that with here in Cleveland, with how Dorsey's handled it, and I think we're going to continue to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually would not even have a problem if John Dorsey traded the Browns' first-round pick this year.
I wouldn't either.
I would not bat an eyelash. Because what do you need? Okay, you need a tackle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You need... you probably need a linebacker because you're probably going to replace Jamie Collins. You're going to need another corner or two or three because you can never have enough cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's independent of anything with Denzel Ward and if anyone's worried about him, which I'm not, but I get why some people might be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would have no problem if John Dorsey wanted to flip that number 17 pick in the draft for a experienced, in his prime, Pro Bowl caliber player. I wouldn't bat an eye.
Antonio Brown?
That'll never happen. That will never happen.
I'm just asking, would you do it?
I would, but
Odell Beckham Jr.?
I don't like contemplating stuff that'll never happen.
Odell Beckham Jr.? I don't know that it would never happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the cap hit for the Giants is like $30 million if they traded him, and I don't see the Giants doing
gotcha.
That.
But that's the type of level player I want if I'm giving up 17.
Right.
Or, and here's the other thing, you could always trade back six spots, you know?
No. I'm done with the trading back stuff.
No? Not a fan of that?
I hate to trade back.
At 17, it especially in this draft, you might be...
You don't
on the fringe of getting one of the elite, I know the Browns have traded back a lot.
I've watched 2 decades of the Browns trading back in the draft. I'm good.
You don't want to trade back and get Corey Coleman?
No.
But Carson Wentz, North Dakota State, he's not going to be good.
We got Corey Coleman instead of Michael Thomas.
He's not going to be good. Yes.
I mean,
everyone had Corey Coleman ahead of Michael Thomas.
But here's the thing. I can't complain about that because Michael Thomas is like the best receiver in the league, and he's catching passes from Drew Brees.
Exactly.
It worked out.
It did. No, it did. And here's, yeah. This is, no, we're about to wrap it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no break. We don't need to break here. We're about to wrap it up. But I think that if you can use that 17 pick and get, I don't know, is there a shutdown corner out there? You know, is there going to be a shutdown corner available? Maybe.
That's probably a trade you can't make because you need, like, cornerbacks are gold right now. Cornerbacks are as important to teams right now as quarterbacks, in my view.
What?
They're as important?
Quarterbacks are more important than anything.
I understand. I'm saying, though, but on the defensive side of the football, it's pass rusher, edge rusher, and your corner. Those are the two positions you absolutely have to have filled on your defense to have a shot in hell of being anything in the NFL. Much like on the other side of the football, you can't win without a quarterback.
I see what you're saying.
It's on that same level. It's important. Right. You have to have three positions to be a championship caliber team in the National Football League. You have to have the Holy Trinity: quarterback, cornerback, edge rusher. You have to have those three players. If you don't have those three players, it's awful, awful tough for you to compete at the level that you need to if you want to be a Super Bowl contender. Luckily for the Cleveland Browns, they got all three filled.
And there will be some good corners available at 17.
Yeah.
I believe that. Just looking ahead, I do.
I haven't gotten into the – I know the Senior Bowls this week. This was actually refreshing for me this year. Like, I didn't spend my November and December scouting college football players.
It's awful. That's tough.
For the first time in like 5 years, I did not spend November and December scouting college football.
2016, 2017, that's the Bengals were out of it in December.
Right.
And it was all, that's all I did. It's draft. And by the time the draft gets there, you're exhausted.
I know. I'm sick of it.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, now you can start at normal time.
By April 1st, I'm just like, is the draft over yet? Why? Oh, yeah. And, you know, this year, it's going to be, I don't even have to care about the quarterbacks. You know, maybe a late round guy. I think Trace McSorley.
I'm calling it now.
I think that there's a chance in the
Trace McSorley.
Sixth or seventh round. I think that you take a flyer on a guy. Okay. Because
mm-hmm.
you can, because at best case scenario, it turns into an asset that later you flip into a couple of first round picks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not that you're threatening Baker Mayfield or anything like that. It's about developing somebody who, like the New England Patriots mm-hmm. have done behind Tom Brady all these years. Look at all the quarterbacks that they flipped into assets. It's that same philosophy. It's not like you're spending a high pick. And if the guy doesn't work out, who cares? It's a sixth or seventh round pick.
Exactly.
What do you do? Like, if you get a sixth or a seventh round pick, like, to turn into anything, let alone Tom freaking Brady, like, you know, it's gravy for you, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're
if they turn into they make the team and contribute on special teams.
Right.
Seventh rounder. That's great.
Where you make your money as a GM and where you're ultimately judged is those first and second rounders. If you blow those, it doesn't matter how many third through seventh rounder guys you find, because if you're blowing the best picks in the draft, right?
You're not going to have the stars.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. And you need, and one of my biggest criticisms of the Browns for years, aside from all the losing that they had done, is they never had blue chip talent. Mm-hmm. Well, now you look at the roster, they got blue chip talent.
Yep. Which means
in a variety of positions.
Which means they can go at it in free agency via trade. They can play around. They could be the Rams. Seriously, quarterback, young offensive-minded head coach, running back in place, cornerback in place, pass rushers in place.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of potential here. A lot of potential.
And with that, we're gonna leave. This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
God, I'm really tired of hearing you tell me how great the Rams going to the Super Bowl was.
Oh, it was great. It's gonna impact everything. It's gonna make your life more fun here in Cleveland. Follow Daryl on Twitter at Right or Wrong Fan. Follow me on Twitter at James Rapine. We'll be back at it next week. We'll do some Super Bowl prop bets next week.
Super Bowl prop bets?
What do you think about that stuff?
I'm not a gambling man.
All right, we could talk.
Would you like to know why?
Because you've lost too much.
Because I always lose.
That's right. I knew it.
Have you not remembered? I'm 1-for-25 in my predictions.
You had a lot. By the way, I had Rams and Pats on our 92.3 Fan Super Bowl predictions at the beginning of the
Did playoffs. You really?
I swear. Go back and look.
I also said
Mike McCarthy would be the Browns head coach. We'll talk to you guys next week on the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.